Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tyrant Weekly Podcast number 67. Today, we're going to discuss movies. We're going to review a couple movies.
We're going to make a couple movies.
While we're recording the podcast.
While we're recording this podcast on our iPhone, editing it on our iPad.
All while watching The Office?
Yeah, we're going to go through, we're going to talk about Clash of the Titans. We are going to talk about the Disney documentary Waking Sleeping Beauty. And we're just going to go from there. So Clash of the Titans came in at number one this week, making $61.2 million.
How much do you think this is going to drop next week?
It's going to drop down to number five.
Yeah, easily.
Probably not, easily. But it will drop at it off of one.
I think to three or something, but yeah, it's probably going to bring in another 20.
So why don't we talk about Clash of the Titans, shall we?
Might as
Do
well.
You want to talk about it? I mean, I kind of told them we were going to talk about it, so we might as well talk about it.
We should go over to top five.
Well, let's just say that How to Train Your Dragon beat out the last song.
So that's good.
Miley Cyrus, last song!
It dropped significantly.
And, Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married came in at number two at $29.2 million. I did not see it. Don't plan on seeing it. Not my kind of movie, so I'm not going to see it. Okay,
wish
so.
Wish you were a racist, Bankman.
What? I just,
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
It's just, yeah. Even when I'm one of the people that I work with saw the movie, and she likes Tyler Perry movies, and she said she hated this one, so...
Nice.
Just saying.
She's black?
Right. Yeah. So there you go, okay? There, I said it, all
right? That's right. You got black friends?
Is that a George reference?
I don't know.
Are there any other movies that have question marks at the end of the title that are good?
Look Who's Talking Now.
Look Who's Talking Now?
Yeah, when you have to have sometimes explanation point is hit and miss.
Whip It. Yeah. The Informant!
The Informant?
Does Kick Ass have a thing?
No, just Kick hyphen Ass.
No, it's like Kick Ass?
Does Ninja Assassin? No.
No, it's Ninja Assassin.
He's already a ninja. He's also an assassin. Like a double.
Okay.
So with Clash of the Titans, it's like Clash of the Titans?
Clash of the Titans?
What happened there?
Instead of putting like quotations or italicizing movie names in our post, we should just add question marks.
That'd be funny. Okay, so anyway, let's. What are you going to say, Mason?
Let's talk about Clash of the Titans.
Okay, we're talking about Clash of the Titans.
Have you seen what's happening out there? Have you even bothered to look?
They need to be reminded of the order of things. Turn them on each other.
One day, somebody's gonna have to make a stand. One day, somebody's gotta say enough.
If I do this, I do it as a man.
But you are not just a man.
Release the Kraken!
Okay, well, let's talk about the original first. I watched it a month ago.
Yeah.
How do you like it? I showed it to my kids for the first time. They loved it.
I showed it to my wife.
They want some more of it.
She said it was she said it was very cheesy, but...
I haven't seen it in years.
It is cheesy.
The effects have aged so poorly, which is why I was like, remake? I was like, okay, I can see that. I can see it.
Well, this is a movie that I grew up on Clash of the Titans, the original.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Love that film. And it's one of those movies growing up watching over and over again, saying like, man, I'd actually like to see this updated. I'd like to see it with like good special effects, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to see...
Back in the 80s, you're like...
I hope... Back in the 80s, I'm like, yeah.
I hope they make this baby 3D.
We'll talk about that, not like when I was a kid, but as I got older, you know? Clash of the Titans, classic movie that couldn't use a good upgrade. So, you know, I was looking forward to it. You know, watching the trailer. I mean, the movie made for a great trailer, right?
Yeah.
The trailer was great. Did a great job selling everyone on it, getting everybody
hyped.
You're
like, this is going to be the original story, the classic Clash of the Titans story.
With updated special effects that look awesome.
I talked about that in this post I did for this awful trailer for 12, for Joel Schumacher's 12. I talked about how, like, we're all, like, fortune tellers. We use, like, trailers like crystal balls. You know? Like, this movie, you see little tidbits of it, you're like,
this movie
is going to suck, or this movie is going to be good, and, like... Clash of Titans is one of those ones, like, you see tidbits of it, and you're like, here we go, it's going to be great. You're looking at a crystal ball, and you see yourself, like, winning $1 million.
You're not just judging it on the trailer, either. You're judging it on the person directing the film and their past works. You're judging on the actors that are going to be in the movie. You're judging it on...
But I think a trailer does give a really...
No, the trailer gives you the best possible glimpse of what you're getting
if they didn't falsely advertise what it's going to be.
Yeah.
They advertised exactly what it was.
I know, but I'm just
thinking
Green Zone. You can set up some pretty false expectations in place and set yourself up just to lose based on the fact that you put in bad expectations as opposed to the film actually being bad.
Yeah.
Well, even if a trailer is just so amazing, like Where the Wild Things Are, even if the film, I like Where the Wild Things Are, but like for a lot of people that fell short, it's like there's, you go through all these emotions, yet, you know, it doesn't delivers everything, but it delivers somewhat. Clash of Titans, like, I don't think it delivered on any level for me.
No, it didn't. It didn't deliver on any level at all. I didn't.
I want to revisit the trailer so I can be excited for it.
I had fun. Oh, well, okay. Do we want to still talk about the original? Should we move on to the actual film now? Or anybody?
Yeah, let's move on.
So, seeing Clash of the Titans.
So, anyway, in the original.
No, in Clash of the Titans, we had the director who just came off doing this newest Hulk. We have Sam Worthington, who did Avatar, who did a bunch of other crappy films.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
Fines.
Yeah, we had all these actors. Genma.
Yeah, you had a good...
Bond girl.
You had a
Bond
great...
Girl.
Gemma Arterton.
Arterton.
Gemma Arterton.
Yeah.
She's hot. Okay. but you got this great cast of actors. Unfortunately, the dialogue and script was so bad that they sucked. Everybody fell flat beyond any flatness.
Well,
beyond what the people in the 13th century when they thought the world was flat. Flat. I mean, it was
that
bad.
Flat.
It's very flat.
It's flat.
So flat.
Yeah. Well, it's. Just like you start, just watching the film, I think if you've read the reviews and stuff like that, they kind of just basically ditched the entire original, the original story,
there is the Greek mythology.
Is nothing in this story that has anything to do with the original.
This is
a completely different movie.
They pick and choose the characters.
Yeah, they pick and choose their characters. Completely different story.
Completely different character motivations.
Yeah.
Which is weird because now they don't. The characters don't even make sense anymore.
Yeah.
About why they're doing the stuff that they're doing.
Just real quick, the original film followed Perseus as he was trying to save the woman he loves that he wants to marry. Okay, because she's going to be sacrificed to the Kraken, and his whole mission in the original film is to go out and save her.
Very clear motivation.
Very clear motivation. Smooth transitions.
Gets helped by his father, Zeus.
It's already in Greek mythology. Why change it?
Right? Exactly. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. This movie ditches that. Andromeda is barely in the movie at all. She plays no big part in it, really.
Which leaves you, if you saw the original, completely confused to how he's going to fall in love with her, which doesn't happen.
But, and you're thinking, okay. Should we move on to Io?
If you want.
Okay, I want to...
Well, this is spoilers. We're getting into spoilers here.
Yeah, this is a spoiler review. I don't care. I'm sorry. Everyone that's probably seen the movie has seen it anyway.
Yeah.
So
we're gonna try to talk you.
We're trying to talk you out of it.
Yeah, we're trying to talk you away from the film.
So Io because is Perseus's love interest in this movie. Now, through most of the movie, I'm thinking, how can that be? Because it's supposed to be Andromeda, and Io has been watching over Perseus since he was a baby.
Very unregistered sex offender kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
I've always been watching over you. Yeah. You know?
And time traveler's wife.
And well, so reversed. She watches yeah. Perseus grow up. And then she ends up just revealing herself during now. Yeah. After all these years, she's like, well, I'm just going to let you know I've been watching over you all these years. And now I'm going to go on this journey with you.
What they're yeah. doing is...
I'm going to tell stories.
Well, everything that happens...
I'm going to narrate everything that's going on while we are going on this
Well, everything journey. That happens with her character is everything... is all the information that Perseus needs to learn. And that's usually... it's all was done in the original film by this mechanical owl, Bobo, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And yeah. so they replaced that character with a female character who... and they totally kind of disregard her own mythology.
Oh, yeah. Totally so, just like, her mythology's jacked up, so...
Yeah, so...
You're like, you don't want to be with that chick.
Yeah, because, yeah, she was turned into a heifer because she slept with his father. Very weird that they would sort of flip that around in such an odd way.
Yeah. While we're on this, just real quick... Zeus gives Io as a gift to his son Perseus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, here you go, son. Now, I don't know, but that was you know, weird. Zeus did have sexual relations with her, so it's like from father to son. And Perseus was obviously like
from father to son, like father.
Like father to son. Hello. So yeah, that was interesting. So this story pretty much focuses on Perseus saving heaven and hell from the dark side, from Hades,
which is taking over everything. Which is a different motivation than the original.
Exactly. I mean, this is the exact same storyline as Disney's Hercules.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
He meets with the Fates also. It's so ridiculous. Yeah, it's exactly that.
I think a big thing for me is nothing feels earned.
Oh, know? Yeah.
Like nothing of what Perseus does, like the way he fights, it's all just comes natural.
No, it does. Well, that's the thing. You think it comes natural, but the whole time when the other soldiers ask him, "Have you ever fought?" And he's like, "I've only mended nets.
Yeah,
I've never picked up a sword." Yeah. You know, and then they'll go, and he'll pick up a sword for the first time, and they'll be like, "Well, I'm gonna train you." So they take him out in the woods for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden he's like
badass.
The most badass soldier or person in this movie.
That kind of happens in the original.
Not necessarily.
Just for an audience, it doesn't feel. You just go like, oh, I was trained to fight when I was a kid. Just put that in there.
Yeah, he goes from apprentice to master in literally 30 seconds.
Yeah, and that doesn't feel earned. In the original, Perseus has to capture Pegasus, right?
Yep.
This one...
Pegasus flies down and is like, hello, Perseus. Yeah.
It doesn't talk. He's
all... I'm here to be a horse pet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make...
Perseus played... And what's the horse's name again? Pegasus plays a bigger role in the original film than he does in this one. I think he's, what, in only like 2 scenes in this movie? Where he first meets him, and then at the very end, when he fights the Kraken, he comes flying.
Yeah, there's no relationship.
He's like, he's like the motorcycle Indiana Jones finds like on the side of a building. He's like, I gotta use this.
Yeah, they changed the story. That happens. You can sometimes salvage these things, but there was still no sense of adventure, and then the action sequences felt completely disjointed. There was no feeling of danger.
I can't remember where I read this review, but they said that it was like, if you like video game cutscenes, then this is the perfect movie, and that's exactly what it was.
Minus
the fun, exactly.
Yeah, of actually playing a video game. I'm just surprised by the director's choices in this film, because just looking at what was done in Hulk, I don't know how much I mean, Edward Norton is notorious for his secret hand in the projects that he happens to work on. I feel like this could have used some Ed Norton would have been awesome or something, right? It just seemed like...
Because I like the Hulk.
Yeah,
but now I know why. Because I think, like you said, I think Ed Norton was one of the most very powerful creative source behind that movie.
Yeah.
So well, with this one, it's, I
think when we had a Comic Con panel, and people were just asking him questions about the Hulk. He didn't have to defer to someone. He knew the stuff.
Yeah,
he knew it.
Yeah, well, I didn't, you know, and I didn't care for any of the characters in this movie. Like, at the beginning, when you see Perseus as a kid, he gets this family, his family raises him his whole life, and then, you know, they get taken out.
Now, I'm going to ask him, where in the film did you go, this sucks? Because I know the exact scene I said, I'm checking out of this film, because...
Let me finish this and I'll tell you exactly where I said this sucks. Okay.
Because I was on board until that moment. And then I was like, okay.
Well, I'll just tell you right now. I was on board. I was on board until it said 12 years later. When you saw that thing come up and said 12 years later, I was like,
oh, come on.
That's bullcrap. They did a complete BS setup at the very beginning of the movie that didn't need to be there in the first place.
What's funny is you can do 12 years later. You can do that and it crossed us all.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, but...
And that's where they lost me. That's where I'm like, okay, this movie's going downhill all the way from
Okay, I was a bit more forgiving. I gave up when they raised the owl and then they just ditch it. Oh, we don't need that.
Well, pissed me off altogether. It's like, how can you... Because... You know, and I knew exactly what they're doing. Don't tell me anything otherwise. They were taking this old piece of junk, which what they were calling the original film, and they just threw it back in the trash. Like, this movie is not that.
This belongs back in the trunk.
Like, they had to make this statement that their movie's going to be better than the original.
Imagine if you could have
made...
Imagine the cool CG mechanical owl they could have made if they wanted to do it right.
Way cooler.
Well, I would have much rather seen a mechanical owl than having Io the whole time going, you know, saying, teaching them things to the whole...
Yeah.
I mean, literally, the movie was her talking adventure scene. Her talking adventure scene.
Yeah. Well, I would say almost like this is not Clash of the Titans because it is not the story.
It had the monsters. It had the mythological creatures in it. That's the one thing that this movie had that connects it with Clash of the Titans and what that story actually is.
Yeah, pretty much the monsters.
For me, it's just like, I can't really pinpoint where this lost me, but as far as just not knowing motivations, them being just really, like, the whole thing was Zeus having a hand in it. Like, he's the one who releases the Kraken. You hear it in the trailer, you know, and it's like,
release the Kraken!
Yeah, I don't have any money. He goes, release the Kraken, and it's like, but please, someone, I hope Perseus defeats the Kraken. Release the Kraken! Let's hope. I'm going to give Perseus all these things so he can defeat the Kraken.
And regarding to those other things, let's talk about that for a minute. In the original film, Zeus gives Perseus the sword and the shield.
Helmet.
Helmet. And guess what? Perseus gladly takes it. Perseus is like, hells yeah! I'm gonna put this on. Yeah.
I never knew who my father was. I never knew any of these things about myself. I've just been living on this island that's...
And now I get this awesome shield and a sword and a helmet. I'm going on a freaking adventure. Okay? And this one, Perseus is like... You know, they throw him the sword. He's like, it's a gift from the gods. He's like, I'm not gonna take it. If I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it as a man.
Yeah. And he keeps doing it.
He keeps saying that to the whole movie. I'm gonna do this as a man.
I'm gonna eat this BLT as a man.
Yeah, he finds out I'm half a god. Screw that.
I'm half a god. Screw. I'm not gonna use those powers. I'm not gonna use them until I really need them.
Yeah, I'm gonna let everyone die. Yeah, the only thing would be very selfish.
It's like exactly. Had he used the gifts from the gods from the very beginning, he would have been the only one left at the end of the movie.
He wouldn't have been. Yeah. Yeah, because in this one, like, he literally,
literally, you have a character that says that.
Yeah, like, come on, dude, you gotta use this stuff, or we're all gonna die.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
dude is a man.
Dude is a man. Until the very end when Zeus gives
dude
him...
Dude is a man.
That's been a joke for years, but
and,
with us.
And, yeah. And not only that, yeah, exactly. And not only that, but even at the very end of the film, when he beats the Kraken, when he finally does use the sword, right?
And Pegasus.
And Pegasus, and he finally uses all the gifts that the Zeus gave him. After he does it and he defeats the Kraken, he goes right back to saying,
yeah,
I'm gonna do this as a man.
Yeah. It's like, stay here.
It's
as
like,
a man.
How much in denial are you?
Come on, Perseus.
And then Zeus gives him his sloppy seconds, and it's all cool.
Well, it's like, hey, I need you to nail this nail into this board. It's like, I'm gonna use it as a man. I got this hammer for you. This hammer will make it a lot easier. And he's just like making his hand all bloody.
He's trying to pound the nail over his fist. No, I'm gonna do this as a man.
Oh wait, here's a hammer. Hammers it in with the hammer. And then, like, drops the hammer. It's like, oh, I see you use the hammer. Very good job. You want to come join me?
Yeah.
No. I did it as a man. Like, no! You used the hammer. You used all the gifts that I gave you.
And lots of people died.
Because you were an idiot.
Like, the most fun I had watching this movie was afterwards when we were talking about it and just totally joking around about it.
Well, just the scene where Perseus and Io are kind of flirting. On the boat.
Oh, the boat of death?
Yeah.
Death's boat.
It's like, hey, baby, let's get fresh on these dirty old coins.
Yeah.
In the hull of a death boat.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not a place for you to hook up with a hot chick. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, you know.
With a hot chick who's been eyeing you all your life.
Centuries old.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but even prior to that scene, where Io is teaching these soldiers about Medusa. She's talking about...
We're talking about plot hole here.
Plot hole here, okay. So she's talking about, you know, this is... No one's ever come out of Medusa's cavern alive. No one knows what it's like in there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you exactly what it's like.
I'm
going to tell you exactly how she fights.
This
before
is
you
did.
Go in.
This is what she does. This is how she moves.
And, yeah.
But no one knows.
Oh, and by the way, I'm not allowed in.
Where did you pick us up from a magazine?
It's like, wait a second.
Is Medusa...
How did she know all this stuff?
Is Medusa posting blogs like, this is how I fight?
Medusa playbook number one.
Jeez, it's like, oh yeah, she, I don't know, whatever. So it's just one of those things.
When you totally change a character like that, and it changes what everyone else has to do. And
yeah, you gotta think these things through. It's like,
if you're gonna rewrite something, you gotta make sure everything that was connected to is redone correctly. Because, I mean, they could have...
I wouldn't have minded...
If you could have had a Zeus versus Hades and all that kind of stuff, it's like, okay, I was almost on board, but, like, you didn't do it well.
If I wouldn't have mind if they would have used the exact same story as the original film, even if they used the same script, as cheesy as it was, if they used the... If it word for word... update with updated special effects. Yeah. I'd have,
not a frame by frame.
I probably would have
remake,
enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But if they would have used that same story, and I don't know if it felt the same way for you, but while watching this movie, it seems like there were just chunks of this movie that were just left out. There was like no connective tissue to some of the stuff that it did not flow smoothly at all. I mean, this was a rough cut, edited movie.
Very, very jarring to follow.
Where it's just like very hard cuts from one scene to another.
I just don't get how all these good actors signed on to such a weak script. Or it's just
Ralph Fiennes never looked so weak.
Oh my gosh. Exactly.
This is Voldemort here.
I know, dude. And he's going around going like, yes. Hello, brother. Brother.
Although I will say this, as far as this goes, it's still better than Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
Wow.
But
it sticks closer to the Clash of the Titans story than Percy Jackson did to the book.
Jeez.
So,
and just on another note, with the special effects, I mean, how bad were those?
Terrible.
They're terrible.
Oh, we gotta say too. We knew going in that the 3D was gonna be bad, so we watched it in 2D.
Yeah, we didn't go see it in 3D. Knew there wasn't any point in doing that.
And as I watched it too, I'm like, what part of this would be exciting in 3D? None of it. I'm like, none of these shots would work or would feel really deep with the 3D. You know, like all. Well,
for example, Alice in Wonderland was. They knew from the beginning that they were going to do this conversion process because of the way that they were going to warp things and et cetera, et cetera. You couldn't really do the Queen's huge head and shoot it 3D, all that stuff. Okay, I get that. But they did that from the beginning of production all the way through, and they spent like, a year or more on it? And it was an important part of the production. This was rushed in the last, three or 4 months?
Yeah, they
made
up their decision like in the last second. They're like, oh, let's put it on 3D so we can make some more money. Yeah!
After
don't care how crappy it is!
After it begins in 3D.
When my friends saw it, it said they were watching the movie, they were taking their glasses off during the 3D movie saying, what the hell's the difference? It literally could have just not did any type of conversion, gone in there and said, hey, it's in 3D. Wear these 3D glasses and watch it.
So, okay, I'm guessing what they did is they have just the whole film in 2D, and then there's just selective moments
that they just plug in. That's probably it.
And then they try to just make a few things deep.
And then they mark it as a hardcore 3D film, like, you know?
I think it's such a bad
Very bad. Move. Yeah, very bad move. Like I said, the only reason I found this movie fun at all was the fact that it was so bad. And it was so bad that it was funny.
Well, just in the same way we would find a really terrible B horror film or something and watch it and just talk about it.
But those kind of movies know what they are. You know, they know it's a B horror movie. You know, when you go on a movie like
and this
Transporter... You know, or just a Jason Statham action flick. You know what you're going
to
get.
We're from Transporter to any Jason Statham.
That's all the same.
Yeah. But I love Jason Statham movies. Totally. I love those kind of movies. But I know what it is. But this one tried to be something epic and something huge. And they, you know, everyone's talking about how it's something like something that we've never seen before. But we've seen better. And that's the problem.
The Kraken wasn't scary. Medusa was not dangerous. I mean, I get that they flipped things around and made her pretty, and then when she...
Oh, and they made her faster, you know? It's like, look, let's make her faster.
But there wasn't really any... They didn't feel like there was any stakes. And then you just saw all the central characters just dead with only Percy left. And you're just like, oh, I didn't really care.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's no fun at all.
Yeah.
And then there was when they reveal the Kraken in the movie. I mean, you see the Kraken. I mean, in the trailer, it's like, the Kraken is like the coolest part of the trailer. You see that Kraken, you're like, wow. You know, that looks awesome, right? So in the movie, you're already knowing what the Kraken looks like. They have this, 15-minute buildup of suspense before they actually reveal the Kraken during that scene where it's like, the Kraken's coming, and then like 15 minutes of tentacles flying around and like this big bulging thing coming out of the water. You're like, okay, we know what the Kraken's gonna look like. You don't need to don't need to keep building up the suspense because there is no suspense to build. Now I'm just annoyed.
It's not like going into Cloverfield, like, oh, what does this thing really look like, or something. You know, it's like, we know what it looks like. You
showed us
it. Yeah, you should have saved it.
I don't think, even if you saved it, it would have been like, there it is.
Yeah. I mean, it probably would have had a lot better, you know, a lot more impact had they not showed the Kraken in the trailer.
Yeah.
But they kept Medusa hidden the whole time from the trailer, probably because it sucked.
Yeah.
Because it was bad CGI.
Yeah.
And they literally spent all their money on
the Kraken.
The
only thing I'll say that the director was able to do well is give everything a sense of scale. But having played God of War 3, that it has a feeling of scale so much bigger and so much more solid than this film, it would have...
I think the word's more epicer.
More epicer. More epicized. Yeah, it just was... Some of the scenes where with the Kraken, just like... It didn't feel like you were looking at a man in a suit thrashing a model, but it didn't feel like there was this huge thing. You never really felt like you got... I mean, I could probably draw you what the head looked like, but I couldn't tell you what the rest of it looked like.
Oh, yeah. Is it as being connected as a whole? Nothing makes like, sense.
What was attacking
it was
the,
like a half,
what part of it was attacking the city?
It was like a
city?
Quarter octopus, a quarter alligator.
I saw a weird, like crab-ish arm
hunchback.
Or something, right? Yeah, I didn't know what was happening.
It's like, okay, I don't know how this thing looks.
A lot of chinchilla in there.
Yeah, but so, I mean,
if you really want to watch this film, rent it. Don't buy it, rent it.
Don't film, definitely don't pay the $20 to go see it in 3D.
Yeah.
Redbox it.
Just don't watch
it. It was, you know, it just, I was very, we were all disappointed in it.
Yeah.
We all had high hopes for it, and it just,
until
it was
the first,
big letdown.
First
and,
big disappointment.
And
of
now,
the year.
And now, like, you know, at first I was excited for, you know, the director, Louis Leterrier, to do
Avengers.
Of the Avengers. Now I don't want him to go near it. I do not want him to direct the Avengers.
You don't
keep
want him,
away from
you don't,
it.
You don't want him serving food around there either.
Maybe Norton.
Yeah.
Maybe Edward Norton collaborating with someone else or something.
So, yeah, so. I guess our recommendation is don't go see it in theaters.
But what did you guys really think, though?
All right, I liked it. I was just joking.
Epic.
Okay, so Abe Froman and I went and saw a Disney documentary recently called Waking Sleeping Beauty.
At the Walt Disney Studios from 1984 to 1994... a perfect storm of people and circumstances changed the face of animation forever. But it almost never happened.
We knew we hit rock bottom when the studio told us that we were being kicked out of our own building.
I think after that meeting, we all kind of said, we're going to make great films.
Can you really do what you want to do in animation?
We have to do in this company. That is our legacy.
From the producer of The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast, comes the true story of the players.
Hi, Tim.
This is Tim Burton.
And who are you?
I'm John Lasseter.
He's the cameraman.
And the passion.
The real heartbeat of this company was, is, and will always be the film business.
That fueled one of the greatest comebacks in entertainment history.
And the winner is Beauty and the Beast.
Told by the people who were actually there.
We were a group of artists living the dream. We went from hitting rock bottom to creating the most successful films ever. This is the story of how we got there.
This tells the epic tale of how Disney went from a failing animation movie studio to the big, popular, huge animation studio that they are today. Now, when Walt Disney came into the whole scene in the beginning with Snow White and started making those movies, I mean, Disney was strong. I mean, Disney, that was it. They pioneered animated movies. And then there came a point where those animated movies started sucking.
Sucking, even though the budgets were still huge.
Yeah.
They were just hemorrhaging money because they're just not.
And then that was that. Those movies started with The Black Cauldron. I don't know if you remember that movie or not. Very dark movie for a Disney film.
I think it could just see like their animation style change from like Snow White, and then Pinocchio had the same feel. But you look at Sleeping Beauty, and you look at like some of their later stuff. It has a completely different feel.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it has Disney's hand anymore, and in some cases, not even at all.
It's that like, kind of that stretching.
That signature stretching. And it almost has it, and some of these, the lighter ones have like this, it just, for me, like, I think like 101 Dalmatians, it just has like this dirty feel to it, and just kind of like, this almost, it felt like it was sketched as opposed to like this fluid animation style that you...
But it was the Black Cauldron ultimately that started this road down to a demise into more crappy animated movies. And Disney didn't know what to do. I mean, they were like, we're Disney.
Yeah.
We gotta keep making these, even if they are crap.
Even if they lose tens of millions of dollars,
we gotta keep making.
This is marketing, right? This is Disney.
Yeah, this is our legacy.
This is our legacy, so we have to keep doing it, you know? And so this movie, this animation department was just falling, and you know, they, no one cared anymore. I mean, they
kicked
Disney.
Well, first of all, they kicked them off the lot.
Yeah, they kicked it. They eventually kicked them off the lot, and moved them into these little bungalow style buildings down on Flower Street in Glendale,
which is near us, by the way.
Which is right, yeah, it's right down the street.
It's interesting watching the making of Snow White and what was Hyperion Studios, which where when I was growing up is now like a grocery store. But those studios, everyone was together and collaborative, and Disney was very honest in saying that when we moved into our other studios, it broke up that community.
Yeah, they cover that in the movie too. When they were in those studios, they all had their own offices. When they got moved into Glendale, they were less separated. They were all like in
cubicles.
Cubicles. Cubicles. They're all in cubicles, and so all of a sudden they were always sharing ideas off each other. They were really feeding off each other.
I mean, it actually helped when they did that. It actually sparked.
It
reignited like an imaginative bump in their minds, I guess, and who they are. But
yeah, in most work environments, interrupting someone else when they're doing something like that can be very bad. But when it, I think, comes to things that are creative, and especially something that's collaborative, you need to bump into each other and interrupt each other as much as possible to get the best possible ideas.
Now, these guys, the guys that, you know, started this, it was after the Black Cauldron and before Little Mermaid, is where they had all these little films like Fox and the Hound 2 and Rescuers Down Under. Great Mouse Detective. Those kind of movies. There was a transition in between that and The Little Mermaid, where, you know, Little Mermaid was being developed as these other little projects were being pushed out to theaters. But it's just really interesting to see this seriously is like all the people there, the people involved, all of the circumstances that made this creative leap. It was incredible how it all came about, you know?
That's a really, just outrageously inspiring story, and you're just almost in awe of something you saw, like, when you were a kid. You're like, oh my, this is what went into that, or this is how it could have ended up. Like, they showed a little thing, they did like 20 minutes of Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
A completely different, it wasn't a musical.
It was, yeah, Beauty and the Beast wasn't a musical.
This very serious film.
And it was the animation style, artistic style was completely different.
It's funny because they kind of the narrator's kind of going over it, and all the narration, it's like all the narration's like from now. It's all looking back.
Yeah, it's from people that actually were there that actually still work for Disney now. Yeah. I mean, these guys all came from CalArts. Yeah. You know, everyone knew each other. I mean, Tim Burton was there. I mean, it was funny. I don't know. I started laughing when they showed Tim Burton up on screen.
Yeah, he just stared
at the camera, just like, just gave you. That's pretty funny. But
yeah, it's like the narration is really funny because, like, you know, like they'll a lot of it's told through caricatures of like events that happen. Like, that's the way of getting back at someone. Like, if someone was really mean in a meeting, they'd do a caricature of them. And so a lot of the stories is being told through narration and these caricatures, and like you see them going over like this the original Beauty and the Beast, and it's like, we've already spent tens of millions of dollars on it, and already 20 minutes in, there's no way they could make us scrap the whole thing and start over again. And then it cuts to like an interview with Katzenberg going, well, we're scrapping the whole thing.
We're gonna start all over. We're starting all over again.
It's like, yeah, it was one of the best decisions they ever could have ever made, but like.
The Katzenberg, who played a huge part in well, see, that's what you think. You think Katzenberg played a huge part in.
He's just a slave. Disney he's animation. A slave driver.
He was a slave. All he was a slave driver, and he took credit for everything that these guys were doing.
Yeah,
and he was like, these guys were the creative ones, but Jeffrey Katzenberg was the guy getting all the press. He was the one
getting the press.
Giving the FaceTime on
which
the media.
I think really, really shows. That,
oh, this is my idea, even though it wasn't. Like, there were times where he wanted to take these stories in a completely different direction that would have killed some of these movies.
What song was it in Little Mermaid that he wanted to get rid of? That they had like
the classic one.
Part of Your World.
Yeah, that's it.
He was like, this is not working. It's like the most pivotal point in that film.
I know, right?
It's like, not working.
He's like, no, we gotta take that song out. Like, you can't take that song out. That's the turning point of the movie.
Like, wow. It's
you know the whole thing in Lord of the Rings where Frodo gets the ring? Not working. Not working for me.
I think it's really showing because you saw that at DreamWorks when he came in and they were doing Ants and they were doing something and it just didn't have...
I know, right?
It didn't have the correct tone. And it wasn't until you had other directors...
Exactly.
And other creative producers come in and do... I mean, DreamWorks is just starting to make good animated films.
I know, How to Train Your Dragon was the best movie I think they've done.
I think...
to date.
I'm trying to think of when it kind of, for me, turned around. Because before I would go DreamWorks Animation, no. I think Kung Fu Panda,
I like Kung Fu Panda, but I still always a little iffy on...
Yeah.
I thought that was a fluke, you know what I mean? Like, okay, they got one good one in there.
Yeah. But I think that's when they kind of go, oh, let's not do all the pop cultural references
everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like...
Let's actually have a good story that people can connect with at any age.
And Katzenberg's still taking the FaceTime. Yeah. After watching this movie, I know people don't change.
Yeah.
Like,
he doesn't suddenly become creative.
Yeah, for any fan of any Disney movie
you have to see this movie.
It's
amazing. There was one point in there where it's like where they said Katzenberg came into a meeting and. He talked to all of the Disney animators and how they were like...
They had no lives.
They had no lives. They were literally working 20-hour days. Like, they would not go home and see their... They would not see their families. And Katzenberg sat there. He's like, all right, I want you to talk to me. I want you to tell me everything that's on your mind. You know, and they gave him these, like, very emotional, like, look, I never see my kids. I work so hard and they giving these... things of what it's like working for him, and they talk about how Katzenberg started to cry in the meeting. He felt, you know, and that he's like, well, I promise that we're gonna try and cut back. Yeah. And then next scene is like, but he never cut back. He kept us on the slave train. Yeah, nothing changed. So it's like, wow, it's amazing. I mean, this is a great document, one of the best documentaries I think I've ever seen. It's just. Especially, you know, growing up on these films. I mean, there was a scene in the movie where they showed footage from the test screening of The Little Mermaid. And I remember I was there. My uncle invited me to go to this test screening of The Little Mermaid. It was an unfinished screening where it had a lot of the pencil animations and stuff. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, my heart, like, dropped. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I was there. I remember that. It's like, wow. It's like, I'm a part of history. But no, it's really cool. If you're a fan of Disney, this is a movie that you definitely have to see.
Or if you just never want to get in the business side of movies, yeah, you're just like, F the business side of it, go ahead and watch
it.
It's
just a huge lesson to any creative
it
company
is.
Out
it
there.
It really is.
Because, I mean, you have Disney, who was such a... an influence on the animated products, and then when he was gone, how do you find a way to have people pick it back up and have the same feeling? I mean, I think when we had Princess and the Frog, we definitely, you're like, oh, they're finally going back to 2D. I don't think it was quite the knockout like Little Mermaid, but
it's a start.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely recommend you go see this. It's only playing in a few theaters right now. It's not in, like, multi-city.
Is its distribution...
It's probably not going to get a wide release.
Is its distribution, like, controversial? Is the story controversial? Is that...
No. I mean, they're very honest. They don't really hold back on, like, you know, talking about someone in a negative way. But
yeah. They just were... Even some of the stuff, it's like, you know, it's like as hard as we're working, you know, part of that was us being so motivated because we were, it's like, man, we're working so hard, but these films we're making are great, you know, like, it's like part of it's their own ambitions as well.
Yeah. And then for Katzenberg, he's like, he's looking at the budgets for these previous bombs or whatever, and he's got to push more, got to push these artists to be able to...
See, all the artists you see Eisenberg, Katzenberg, Roy Disney and you
see that people that even the executives didn't like Katzenberg, you know, like they cut him out of the loop on a lot of different things. It was really interesting to see how, you know, business, like the entertainment industry was run on the business side and how people, you know, act. I mean, there was when Walt Disney Studios built they have a big animation studio now that they built. And Katzenberg had no idea that that was going to happen until they officially announced it at a press conference while he's there. And he's just like, what?
And they showed him look on his face.
Yeah, it's like no one told him. It's like they kept him out of the loop that any of this was happening. Yeah.
Wow.
From there, it kind of just, you know. Yeah, it was a great movie, though.
Yeah.
Great movie. Definitely recommend you go see it or rent it when it comes out on DVD.
Yeah.
Or video on demand. I don't know. All right, so that's about it. Had a couple of good reviews. Did a hardcore rant on Clash of the Titans, telling you not to go see it.
That was the point we're trying to get across.
Yeah. Then we've got Waking Sleeping Beauty. Great movie, especially for the Disney fans out there. Definitely recommend you check it out if you get a chance. Other than that, until next week.
Yeah.